When systems go down, when tickets pile up, and your best tech walks out the door, what does all that really cost you? At CBT Nuggets, we help IT teams stay sharp, confident, and certified with online training that's built for the real world. From cybersecurity to cloud, our expert-led courses help your team close skill gaps before they turn into business risks. Invest in your team. Go to cbtnuggets.com/solutions and unlock training that makes your team sharper and your system stronger.
Part 17. I gripped Chris's hand and snuck a peek through the ship's rail, watching the reflection of the beast. Water fell in rivulets from the monster's head, and it rose to be eye level with the ship, the hull at its jawline, nose pointed in the same direction as the ship's prow. I'd never seen an animal this big in person, and the monster's eyes reflected in the water were the size of basketballs. Thick scales lay fitted close together on its skin like a crocodile's, but its head reminded me more of something older, something larger, a time when reptiles ruled the earth. A man was little more than a minor inconvenience. Its teeth could have been carved from telephone poles for their diameter, and waves lapped to the submerged lower row to tug loose a few shards of tangled seaweed. Both eyes facing the ship blinked. The one to the rear of the head, larger than the one in front, circled with irises of deep crimson. Even seeing their reflection in the water made my head swim, and something wriggled in the back of my mind. Whispers. They roiled in my consciousness, whined like electric engines, and my ears popped as if I was in an airplane high in the sky. From the depths of my brain, floating to the surface of unknown memory, came three broken words. Hoarse and impersonal.
Why you here?
My eyes widened, and I couldn't tear them away from the reflection of the water as Dr. O'Brien's voice echoed in my fuzzy memory. A Psi organic, one of the rarest and most dangerous anomalies that exists.
We mean you no harm.
Captain Grapeshot's voice made me jump for how it broke the silence, and I glimpsed him sweeping the broad hat from his head in a polite bow, as if in the presence of royalty.
We are but merely travelers passing through, one might say. Leave us to live another day, and we will honor these waters as yours for all time.
Silence. Sails creaked, the ship still moving, the enormous predator keeping pace with us by simple, lazy swipes of its long tail. A hush fell over the whispers, and I didn't breathe, my pulse frozen in fear. One of the crimson irises swiveled down, and its reflection in the water met my eye. Ice, so cold it seemed to burn, shot through every vein in my body. I couldn't move, couldn't so much as whimper in fear. The being latched onto me through our gazes, peering into my very soul. Voices slithered through my mind like soft tendrils, too low for me to hear. But something about them seemed curious, almost like the thing in the water was just as perplexed by my existence as I was to its. With every ounce of willpower I had left, I forced my dry eyelids shut and bit my lip at the pain that coursed through my skull in a bolt of lightning.
Go.
A split second after the whispers echoed in my mind, a rumble crept from the huge creature's throat, thunderous and baritone, shaking every board in the ship. With a great plunge, the creature dove, and the enormous, scaly tail rose, arched into the sky behind it. The tail rocketed down after its owner, and sent a geyser of water into the air, higher than the tallest mast of the ship. It rained down on all of us in a heavy curtain and knocked me onto my stomach with the force of the impact, as if trembling itself. The ship wobbled back and forth on its keel, but stayed upright, and the pain in my head began to dissipate.
All hands, count off!
First to stand, Captain Grapeshot checked little Terran over with meticulous care, his eyes probing the rest of the ship for missing crew members.
I'm all right.
Still here, Cap.
Good to go, Cap.
Happy shouts echoed from around the deck, and the color returns to the pirates' faces. Crystalline rivers drained out the sides of the railings to leave behind chunks of soggy grass, fresh-grown seaweed, and a few silvery fish that flopped along the boards in surprise at their predicament. Some of the nearby seagulls started to caw once more, and just like that, the lake went back to its tranquil self beneath the late summer sun. Jamie helped Chris to his feet, and I went to do the same. Whoa. My head fizzed with static, the earlier pain still in the process of ebbing away, and I stumbled.
Hey, easy.
Jamie caught my arm, her green eyes locked onto me with concern.
You don't look so good.
Shaking my head, I winced at another jolt of slowly fading ache in my brain.
I'm fine.
Another hand seized my arm, and the first mate stared into my eyes with a deadly serious frown. His dark gaze flared with shock, and the first mate's jaw went slack.
You looked at it. Oh, no.
My throat closed up, exhaustion from the day's work, and a sudden realization of what I had done, enough to strip me of any useful words. Chris and Jamie stood only feet away, but they may as well have been miles off for how helpless we all were. I'd broken some cardinal rule, done something unforgivable, and the first mate knew it. I couldn't lie. I sucked at lying, and with how dizzy I felt, there was no way I could conjure up a successful excuse.
Captain!
He spun on his heel so fast that he became a blur, and the first mate hauled me by the arm over the deck, his grip ironclad on my wrist.
A word!
Chris tried to hobble to my aid, but a nearby crewman blocked him with a drawn sword. All eyes converging on me as I was dragged over the wet planks of the ship. Halfway up the steps to the helm, Captain Roberts turned, and his eyes narrowed into suspicious slits upon catching sight of me.
What's the meaning of this?
My heart hammered against my abused ribs, and I swallowed at the alarmed glares from the rest of the pirates. Now I'd done it. How badly would they beat me this time? Would they do worse? What would happen to Jamie and Chris? With me still in tow, the first mate pointed to the door of the great cabin underneath the quarter deck.
We need to talk, now.
His curt words were enough to bring the entire deck back into abyssal silence. Many of the nearby pirates taking cautionary steps away from me, as though I had some kind of disease. Even Bosun Amelia lowered her gaze from the captain's, and my guts threatened to overpower me with nausea at the sight of it. Jamie and Chris looked on with horror from the forecastle as I was shoved into the dark interior of the great cabin. It was dark and cramped, with a small table to one side covered in maps and old-fashioned navigational equipment. Empty wine bottles littered the floor, rolling back and forth with the rocking of the ship, and the air smelled of stale alcohol. A lone rapier hung from the wall, beautiful and gleaming, with unlit lanterns on hooks around the room. Two iron hoops in the right side wall supported a simple canvas hammock that swung from side to side, and next to it, a little shelf held various odds and ends, including three books. I was surprised to see the Holy Bible, though not so much that it was rather dusty, and an old edition of Treasure Island held a similar layer of gray fluff over its cover. Oddly enough, the third book, a well-worn copy of Pride and Prejudice, shone like a star, as if someone read from it every single day without fail. In any other circumstance, I might have found it strange for such an old book about Victorian-era love to be popular with a crew of child pirates, but I had little time to dwell on the fact. Captain Roberts slammed and locked the door, while the first mate pulled a wooden chair from the table and set it in the center of the room.
Sit.
He jabbed a finger at it, and his no-nonsense tone made my heart sink. This stranger had been the only one to be kind to us. And now, I was locked in a room with two irate pirates, with not so much as a knitting needle to defend myself with. I slid into the cold oak chair and watched the first mate dart around the room, lighting lanterns. What did they plan to do that they needed such good lighting? Did I dare think about it? Surely they wouldn't kill me. Not now. Captain Roberts stalked to where I sat, and leans down to hiss into my face with a vicious snarl.
What did you do, you proxy cur?
Do I even bother to answer? Will he be more angry or less? I eyed his sword and tried to suppress all the horrific scenarios my panicked mind conjured up as to what they might do.
I...
She looked right at it, Sam.
finished with the last of the lanterns, the first mate rounded on the captain and I with a strange look on his face, one that bordered on hopeful, excited even.
I swear, she met the Leviathan's eye.
His snarl melted into a confused frown, though I couldn't tell if it was from the name or the first mate's words, and Captain Roberts took a step back from me.
It's not possible.
She did.
The first mate stabbed the air in my direction, wearing a giddy smile I'd never seen before.
Which means I was right. There are people who are resistant to the mind's powers, and that means... Oh, for the love of...
Captain Roberts threw his hands into the air, exasperated, and it seemed he'd already forgotten that I sat mere feet away from their conversation.
Not this again, Peter. Five times we've tried, and five times good men never came back from that abyss. It's hopeless.
Peter's shoulders deflated at that, but he stepped closer to the captain, holding up a hand to signal for patience.
So, we send her in. After all, if she doesn't come back, what have we lost? Send me in where?
I tried not to show my shock at the way they talked about me, glued to my chair in unease. The situation kept going from bad to worse, and while I was glad they weren't torturing me, I had a feeling that Peter's plan wasn't one to my benefit. Scowling, Captain Roberts crossed his arms in disapproval.
She'll bring a pretty penny from the soldiers, more alive than dead. The crew needs a rest. We need more ammunition, provisions, and tar to careen the ship. Besides, it's a full day's sail southward.
And we already had a near brush with the Leviathan. Something ripped on Peter's slender face, like the careful, emotionless mask started to slip, and his skin tightened a frustrated red.
So that's it then. We just go on like this, selling bodies to the Greybacks until we're the only ones left. We are all we need.
Captain Roberts growled back, his hand gripping the hilt of his sword so tight I wondered if his knuckles might split.
They deserve this. They started this.
They're people, for God's sake.
Peter erupted and kicked one of the empty wine bottles so that it smashed against the nearby wall into a thousand red shards.
I'm sick of the lion, Sam. Sick of the blood, the death, all of it. I don't want to do this anymore.
His own rage boiled to the top, and Captain Roberts closed on Peter to stare right into his eyes, a vein bulging in his neck.
Even the old man, after everything he did, everything he took from us, was that a wrinkly scumbag a person too? He got what he deserved.
Peter stood his ground, the two almost eyeball to eyeball, hands on their weapons, though neither drew on the other.
But the women... The kids, can you look me in the eye and tell me you sleep better at night after what we did? What would Grace think?
The name hit me like a bucket of ice water, and I remembered how Terran had turned so sad at the mention of this mystery girl. So, she had been important to more than just the child. She'd been someone special, someone close, like family. Something glinted in the corner of Captain Roberts' left eye, a brief gleam in the yellow light of the surrounding lanterns, but he blinked hard, and it vanished.
Get out, Captain, he snapped the words, emotion heavy in his voice,
and Captain Roberts stomped to his desk, his back to the both of us.
It's Captain Grapeshot Roberts. Now get out.
For a moment, Peter's expression crumpled, and he looked genuinely crushed. As if the words hurt more than I knew. But he just sighed and turns to me, his eyes grave.
If anything happens, I'll be close by.
Wait, so you are on my side? I didn't have time to so much as stutter a thank you before the first mate stormed out the great cabin doors and slammed them shut behind him. Deafening quiet fell over the tiny room, and I gulped a nervous lump in my throat, gauging the distance between me and the rapier on the wall. Should I take the chance and try to escape? Where would I go? I didn't know how to use a sword, and even if he was a few years younger than me, the captain definitely had the size and strength advantage. I'd end up hurt, or worse, and God only knew what they might do to Chris and Jamie in retaliation. Cloaked in shadow, the captain kept his back to me, his head hung low over the table full of maps.
Is it true?
His voice lost some of the strong English Caribbean accent, and Captain Roberts let his shoulders slump as if he couldn't hold them up anymore. I made him look less like a fearsome pirate captain and more like a boy in mismatched clothing, with a sword, two boots, and the weight of the world pressing down. If it hadn't been for the heinous things Peter had mentioned, I might have felt sorry for him. Chris and Jamie, I have to think of a way to help them.
It is?
I tuck my thumb into the side of my trousers to keep from shaking. Captain Roberts walks to the bay window in the back of the cabin, and I noticed him rubbing at the shark's tooth necklace he wore close to his chest, as if it was some kind of a good luck charm.
Of all the things that live in these waters, the Leviathan is king. It's a smart beast. It knows when a motor goes out on the water, and it knows enough to understand human words. There are six of them by my count, but I figure they've got babies on the way, like everything else around here. Every time someone's dared to look one in the eye, the monster whispers into their minds, and they are dead within minutes. Everyone, except you.
At last, he turned from the window, both eyes regarding me with skeptical wariness.
We have a deal, the soldiers and I. Whenever I catch someone on the water, I bring him in, and the Greybacks pay me whatever I need. Guns, food, medicine, a ransom fit for a king. As long as I collect enough bodies, they'll pay double for the Rangers, and who knows how much for one who can survive a mind whisperer. But they would pay a lot more for this.
In one hand, the captain held out a piece of white, modern printer paper, crisscrossed with folds and creases. It depicted a simple black box, much like a small plastic travel tote, with a folding handle and four thick hasps to hold it shut. The box looked military in issue, and bore a set of white numbers painted on the side of the case. LDB-01106. Confused, but with the slightest glimmer of hope that I might not get an extra beating today, I straightened up in my seat.
So, what is it?
I don't know.
He flipped the paper to look at the image, the captain's eyes searching the printout as if there were some hidden clue he'd missed somewhere.
But the Greybacks are willing to pay you through the nose for it. Trouble is, with the Leviathan in the sea, and most of their aircraft's not working this far out into the county, the soldiers need us to get it back. And last time they saw this bloody thing, he was in Collins Wood.
My spirits tumbled, that name enough to dash my hopes to pieces.
Collingswood.
The town burned by a horde of missiles, all because of one stupid mistake. Over 5,000 souls lost in a single night. Taking a deep breath, I cleared my throat, desperate to find a positive side to this conversation.
But can't Elsar reach it by land? I mean, if it's that important, they should have the men to get it themselves.
Waving me off, the captain crossed the room to a small cupboard and pulled out a tall wine bottle along with a corkscrew.
You think they'd hire us if they did? Oh, they've got pretty guns and lots of ammo, true. But the boys in gray are stretched thinner than you know. Besides, the water has cut off most of the town from the south, and a bunch of the white-eyed devils made a nest on the eastern side. Over 100 strong. Whatever they dropped in there tainted the air with some kind of chemical, so none of our lads can go 10 feet without a mask. Only way in is from the sea. And we're the only ones who know these waters well enough to get there.
Collingswood is at the end of the ridgeline. If they sent us out to look, we could just cut north and swing around to head for New Wilderness. They can't follow us far on land, and if we can get a head start on the guards.
So,
I tried not to show my anxiety at such thoughts, and focused on gouging the tiny hole in my khakis a little wider at the hip.
We just have to go find this box.
No, lass.
He strode over to me, dropped the paper in my lap, and the captain yanked the cork from his wine bottle.
You do. Peter's getting soft, but he always was the better man of us two. And he just might be right. Sooner or later, there won't be anyone left on the water but us. and we need more supplies to build a fort before winter. We've tried 5 times to retrieve the box, and every time that cursed town swallows whoever we send, there's something wrong with it. Something worse than mutants at its core. But if you bring it back, we could ask for a high enough price to retire from pirating for good. No more fighting, no more death. A fresh start. My brow furrowed, and it dawned on me what he meant.
What's in it for me?
Raising the bottle in a mock toast, Captain Roberts regained some of his former malice in the smirk that crawled over his shrewd face.
Freedom. You bring me that box, I'll let you go.
All 3 of us.
Asking for more made my heart pound, but I couldn't risk losing Jamie or Chris if this deal turned out to be legitimate.
Aye.
He drained a long gulp of the alcohol, and some of the blood-red liquid dribbled out of the corners of his mouth. I wondered how much he drank, and if the dozens of empty bottles were anything to go by, this wouldn't be the last bottle he had today.
But you go along. The other 2 stay to make sure you come back.
The weave on my pant leg gave way, and the thumbnail I'd been picking it with poked through my skin in a burst of light pain.
And our gear. We'll get it back.
Every piece of it.
He wiped his mouth and held the bottle out to me, in anticipation of my answer. Thoughts whirled in my head, and I debated what to do. I couldn't exactly say no, considering that the alternative was to be sold to Elsar as a prisoner of war. But taking this deal meant going into Collingswood alone. I'd never done anything outside the walls of New Wilderness by myself. I still barely knew half of the mutated animals that could be out there. Without Jamie's 6th sense or Chris's experience, how could I hope to get more than 10 yards? The memory of the bosun kicking Chris for protecting me floated up in my mind, and I forced myself to focus on that. Matt and Carla left me behind. I wouldn't do the same to Chris and Jamie. Not a chance. I took the bottle, poured some of the sour, vinegary stuff into my mouth, and choked the wine down in a fit of coughs.
Deal.
Part 18.
Standing on the deck of the Harper's Vengeance, I shivered in the cold of the early morning and stared at what remained of Collingswood, Ohio. Like a wall of slow-moving chalk dust, gray fog hung thick in the air along the shoreline a few 100 yards off, drifting down to the water in curtains that obscured my sight of the ruins. Deep within the fog, faint calls rumbled like thunder, strange bellows and shrieks that sent shivers down my spine. A cold stillness clung to everything, the sky not yet awake, and it chilled my skin enough to remind me that fall was almost here. The air tasted strange, sour, and reminded me of the factory district along the River of Louisville, with its huge smokestacks and funny-colored dew. Ropes creaked, waters lapped at the hull, and few of the crew spoke as they set about lowering the ship's anchor and furling the broad white sails. Boots echoed on the wood behind me, and I faced Jamie and Chris. Ever since my conversation with Captain Roberts, they'd been treated much better, with no more beatings, better food and water, and Peter had brought some hammocks down to the brig so we didn't have to sleep on the floor. Bosun Amelia hadn't come near us the entire time, something I counted as a blessing in disguise, but none of that could shake the acidic knots that snaked through my guts like eels. I tried to put on a brave smile, the Type 9 heavy with fresh cartridges on my shoulder, and glanced at the lifeboat that waited for me in the waves below, a small red canoe on a tow line behind it.
I guess I'll see you guys tomorrow, then.
Jamie gnawed at her lower lip, a habit she'd been unable to kick so much that it bled, and her eyes scoured the nearby shore for a moment.
Stay away from anything that stinks like rot. Dead stuff always draws speaker crabs, and those things are scary in numbers. And if you spot any puppets, don't fight. Just distract them with noise, since there could be dozens that you don't see nearby. Also, don't forget to keep mud out of your ammo. You don't want to get a jam when... Jamie.
Catching her gaze, I gave her a slight shake of my head, wishing I could run to the toilet one more time to throw up from all the anxiety inside my brain.
Don't worry about me, okay? Just take care of yourself. No matter what happens.
She sniffled, And before I could say another word, Jamie hugged me as tight as she could with her one good arm.
If you die out there, I'm going to kick your ass.
Tears attempted to surmount my eyeballs, but I pushed them down and simply nodded. Thanks. Turning to Chris, I fought a jumble of emotions in my head. What could I say to him? If today was my last, I needed to make sure this moment counted. But I didn't even know what to do. His sky-blue eyes pierced mine, and to my surprise, Chris reached for me without a word. Wow. Warmth flooded through me, pleasant tingles from head to toe, his broad chest like a solid wall of silky steel. Behind the fabric of his shirt, I could just detect Chris's heart beating under his skin, a comforting rhythm against my own. Despite the faint aroma of sweat, something about his scent made my brain fuzz over, and heat pooled in my core like molten lava. His arms held me tight, and I shut my eyes to rest my chin on his shoulder, relishing a sense of security I hadn't felt in days. "Go north," his whisper tickled my ear, low enough to keep the nearby guards from overhearing, but enough to snap me from my trance. "Forget the stupid box. Get back to New Wilderness and tell them what happened. Whatever you do, don't come back here." Disappointment sliced through me, and I choked back a lump in my throat. Did he not think I would succeed? Did this mean nothing more to him than a convenient ruse to help me escape? Or was he that set on my survival that Chris never even considered if I wanted to survive without Jamie or him? He'd meant well, but part of me had hoped, even for a brief moment, that perhaps after so many years of being the skinny wallflower, I'd at last found someone who wanted more than my camera skills. Sure, Chris was trying to protect me, but I'd never felt safer than standing there, wrapped in his embrace. He moved to pull away, and I tightened my arms around Chris's shoulder blades to breathe a few stubborn words back to him. "I'm not leaving you." With that, I tore myself out of his grasp, and I climbed down the rope net flung over the ship's rail to the waiting longboat below. Peter and four others waited in the boat, the pirates manning the oars while I sat in the prow, Peter in the stern. As soon as I was aboard, we cast off from the Harper's Vengeance, and I watched over my shoulder as the ship, with my two friends at the rail, grew smaller and smaller in the distance. A single lantern hung from a pole on the front of the boat like a tiny bowsprit, and its yellow flame sputtered the closer we drew to the gray fog. "Masks on," Peter barked, and I reached into the small green bag at my belt to pull the gas mask free from its pouch. The pirates had been given a dozen or so military-grade gas masks by Elsar during one of their exchanges, and they provided me with one for this mission. It smelled like chlorine on my face, but the rubber sealed to my skin, and once I'd tightened the straps over my head, I could hear the hiss, hiss of my breath being drawn through the mask's round metal filter. Surrounded by the gloom, I peered through the plexiglass visor of my mask and realized there were little wafts of ash falling all around. The water droplets in the air tinged pavement gray on my palm. Not much else came into view. The fog-ash mixture so dense that at times I could almost cup it with my hand.
"Should be getting closer."
Peter leaned over the side to peer at the water, his face imperceptible behind his mask.
"The chemical trails are getting stronger. See the color in the water."
I craned my head to look and watched tiny ribbons of greasy rainbows reflect in the waves around our boat.
"What is it?"
"Some kind of contamination."
Peter reclined back on his seat in the stern.
"When the Greybacks bombed this place into oblivion, they set off some fertilizer storage tanks somewhere, and it's been burning ever since. That's where all the fog comes from. Fumes and ash driven by countless fires that never went out. The soldiers say it's burning slow enough that it won't affect the rest of the county, but it wouldn't be the first time they lied about such things."
After another 10 minutes of rowing, I could see the vague outlines of squares in the water below of what had once been houses. More shapes rose from the ashy mist, broken sections of taller brick statues, crumpled chimneys, and twisted remnants of old steel girders. As the water grew shallower, more ruins surfaced. Rusted hulks of cars, snapped telephone poles, and collapsed piles of rubble where homes used to be. Wavy strips of undulating black rock lay in lieu of the asphalt streets. The tarmac melted in the extreme heat of the bombs, and distant banks of fog glistened with various patches of red flickers. Dark smoke choked the sky overhead, blotting out the sun, and fine, slate-colored ash clumped up on my arms, legs, and in my hair. Strange heaps of brownish-white sticks could be seen everywhere, and for a moment, I thought they were old bushes or shrubs. My eyes adjusted to the gloom, and I spotted the first skeletal hand outstretched from one of the heaps, frozen forever in death. Oh, man. The gas mask stopped my hand from covering my mouth in horror, and behind me, Peter grunted, avoiding the sight with both eyes on his shoes.
Imagine fire so hot it melts the skin right off your bones in an instant. All those people just gone, and when they died, the mutants took over. Now it's nothing but a graveyard.
Glancing down, I fought the urge to shut my eyes as we glided right over a submerged patch of more rotting corpses. Arms and legs lay entangled in a desperate final embrace. Rib cages stacked on top of the others, dozens of skulls gaping up at us through empty sockets, their broken jaws opened wide with agony. They were everywhere, in the cluttered streets, poking out from under the rubble of homes, inside the charred cars and trucks, hundreds and hundreds of people with nothing left to them but their bones. How had it felt that night when the missiles rained down from the sky? Had they seen it coming? Did they understand what was happening? Did they know who was to blame, or were they too focused on trying to find a way to keep their families alive for just a minute longer? I dragged my eyes away from the grotesque sight and scanned the fog around me for a distraction. A foolish part of me wanted to believe that I would spot the box lying on the bank somewhere, tucked between some blades of grass like a lost apple. But I knew the pirates wouldn't have risked losing our ransom if the mysterious box was easy to find. No. From where I sat in the longboat, all I could see was the forest of ruined structures around me, endless banks of gray fog, and that man with the yellow chemical suit in the window. What? My head snapped back around, and I stared at the ruined corner of a house, barely standing, with what remained of a window on the half-submerged ground floor. Nothing occupied the dark window save for a fluttering scrap of dirty yellow cloth, likely dropped there by a crow or some other curious winged creature. The longboat lurched, and I nearly fell over, looking around to see a muddy patch of long grass in front of the little wooden prow. Land. From here on, I would go alone. My legs and arms felt numb and heavy as I stepped out onto the grass, the pirates untying the red fiberglass canoe and pushing it to me with a long pinewood paddle tucked inside it. None of them looked me in the eye, save for Peter, who handed me a folded bundle of paper inside a plastic Ziploc bag.
The map won't help much, but it has all the streets and old landmarks of the town before it went to hell.
He pointed over my shoulder deeper into the whirling clouds of smoky mist.
I'd start near the square. Apparently the soldiers had an execution site there before the massacre. Be careful where you go, all right? We can't breathe this crap, but the mutants can, and there's hundreds of them in there. And above all else, if you see something abnormal from this place, especially toward the center of town, stay away from it.
Taking the bag, I tucked the map into the pocket of Chris's flannel shirt and lashed the tow rope of my canoe to a nearby log so it wouldn't float away.
Okay, so when I'm done?
We'll be waiting further down the coast.
Peter hopped back into the longboats, and the pirates rowed off into the fog as he stood in the prow to call out to me.
We can't stay here with the air as bad as it is. If you find the box, paddle north along the shoreline. You'll see a coal barge, big as a house. You can't miss it.
The mist swallowed them up, and for the first time in a long time, I was alone. Okay, Anna. Stay calm. Just do what Jamie would do. Keep your eyes open. I drew a breath through the gas mask filter, pulled the submachine gun from my shoulder, and started up the debris-filled street. With the pall of vapor that filled the air, there wasn't much in the way of sunlight, the entire town clouded in what amounted to a very overcast day. A light breeze kept the falling ash moving, but I still had to shake the tiny flakes from my clothes every so often. Thanks to my gas mask, I couldn't smell anything, but I wondered how foul the air must be if I had yet to see so much as an insect anywhere in my walk. My footsteps crunched on bits of stone, asphalt, and even glass at times, loud as cannon fire in the deserted streets. Every nerve ending in my body fired on edge, and I focused my mind on the image of the black box, repeating the numbers in my head, over and over, like a mantra. LDB-01106. LDB-01106. LDB-01. Something blurred in the extreme right of my field of vision, and I spun to raise my weapon, palms clammy against the cold steel. Nothing, save for rubble and a fire burning a few blocks away. I quickened my pace and climbed over a stack of charred wood and shattered bricks, my boots dislodging crumples of ash from the pile with every step. A little voice in the back of my head screamed at me to turn around and check behind myself, but no matter how often I did, I never caught sight of anything substantial. Shapes moved in the distance, sometimes highlighted by more fires that lit up the fog banks with flashes of orange flame, tall, angular shadows that moved with jerky lunges. More than once, I could have sworn I caught eyes leering back at me from holes in the rubble, but every time I turned my head to look again, there was nothing there. Bare feet slapped at warped pavement when my back was turned. Low gurgles chittered from the ruins, and metallic screech thumps rattled closer to the mist. A loose stone clattered somewhere nearby, and my heart skipped a beat. Okay, I definitely heard that. Scanning my surroundings, I spotted a halfway intact ruin and strode for it with steady, unpanicked steps. If something was following me, I couldn't reveal that I knew, or it might pounce. No, I had to do like Chris said in the farmhouse. I had to outsmart whatever was back there. As soon as I rounded the corner of the building, I searched the crumpled wall with my eyes, and sure enough, there was a hole roughly the size of a couch ripped through the fire-blackened wall of the old home, enshrined with weeds and dripping with enough mold to give a health inspector a coronary. It didn't scream safe by any means, but it was the closest thing to a complete building within a 3-block radius. I pressed the button on a small flashlight that I taped to the heat shield on my Type 9 and squeezed into the hole, doing my best not to crush most of the weeds or leave any muddy footprints on the water-stained floor just beyond the gap. Guaranteed, if anything was on my trail, it could probably track me via scent, but in the case it wasn't that smart or simply had a bad nose, I needed to give myself as much of a chance as possible. Inside, I paused and swept the room with my weapon light. Much of the interior had been burnt from the fire, only a few places on the wall and floor recognizable with smudges of blue paint and a section of scratched linoleum. Everything else lay charred to black cinders. The floor curled and puddled where the heat had melted it, beams in the wall exposed from the collapse of drywall turning to dust. All the windows were without glass, and rainwater had left ring-shaped stains on whatever hadn't been burned to a crisp. If I could have smelled anything, I figure it would have stank like wood rot and charcoal. But there was a hallway to my immediate front, and two walls on either side, enough to give me cover for now. Staying as far back from the window as I could to avoid revealing my light to the outside, I edged down the hallway, pulse roaring in my ears. A door leaned inside its framework at the end. Both hinges snapped, but I could glimpse a set of steps through the gap. If I can get higher, maybe I can see further into town. I slung the submachine gun onto one shoulder and gripped the crumbly black door planks with tentative fingers. A chunk broke off in my hands, and I winced at the noise. How close were the mysterious things behind me? I couldn't hear as well from inside the house, and had no way of knowing if they were right outside or not. Perhaps coming in here had been a bad idea, but it was too late now. If I wanted to live, I had to get through this door. I put my shoulder to the door and shoved as hard as I could. The entire thing cracked under my weight, and the planks fell to the floor with a loud clatter. Each step groaned under my boots, but I climbed to the top and had to crouch under a snapping roof beam to wriggle into the room beyond. It had been a bathroom at one time, with white tile on the walls and floor, an old-fashioned standalone bathtub in one corner. The mirror had been shattered over the sink, whose cupboard was rotting underneath it, and there were scorch marks on the tile work across from the nearby open window. Bits of half-melted glass decorated the floor, but aside from the rubble that filled up half the room, it could almost have been intact. There was even a discarded yellow rubber duck on the floor under the bathtub, and I nearly smiled at seeing it. I would have, if I hadn't looked out the window first. They crept from the street I'd wandered through, six gray figures scuttling around on all fours, with seven more creeping out an alleyway further to my right, while five clambered over a collapsed house a half block to the left. Dressed in rags, their milk-white eyes peered into the fog with hungry persistence, and some of them would stop to sit back on their feet like an ape, tilting their head to listen, mouths slightly agape with that eerie Cheshire smile. Puppets. My throat threatened to close up in fear, but I forced myself to keep calm and switched my weapon light off. With all the ash and dust, I guessed the sun to be obscured enough for these things to roam at all times of day, meaning there would be no safe time for me to travel. They hadn't seen me yet, but if they knew I was watching, they'd surely charge in their typical suicide wave fashion. For now, they weren't shrieking like they did when the chase was on, instead being quiet, stealthy, moving like wraiths in an attempt to track me down. But this time, I'd spotted them first. I glanced down at my gun and shook my head at myself. There were already too many for me to fight alone, and if Jamie was right, there could be another pack, not a block away, doing the same thing.
Come on, think.
Whispering under my breath, I rifled through the room, tugging open the decayed cupboard beneath the sink in desperation. My eyes landed on a strip of canary yellow, and a light bulb went off in my head as I snatched it. It was a rubber exercise band, about 6 feet long and 4 inches wide, the kind used by older people to keep themselves limber when they had grown too unsteady to run or walk. Thanks to the cupboard and the wall behind it shielding the band from the heat of the flames, it hadn't melted, and was still stretchy as the day it had come out of the box. Moving to the window, I picked at the broken wall to tear away chunks of tile and burned wood until two mostly intact 2x4 wall studs were exposed on either side of the window frame. I wove each end of the exercise band into the space and pulled it taut, tying them off with fingers that trembled in adrenalized excitement. Outside, the puppets drew nearer, so close I didn't dare to poke my head above the windowsill. I sat on the floor, facing the window, the band pulled back to my chest, and fished around for a chunk of broken ceramic tile. Here goes nothing. With a shard cradled in the section of band between my fingers, I aimed at the cloudy gray sky above, and let fly. The band jerked back into place, and the tile piece hurled in the air in a long, high arc. I could see it tumble back down toward the empty streets, and outside, one of the puppets let out an inquisitive chirp. Splintering into 100 tiny fragments, the tile shattered around 60 yards down the street from where I sat, and at the noise, dozens of alarmed shrieks echoed in the roadway outside my hiding place. Another scrap of ceramic found its way into my hand, and I aimed a little higher this time. Somehow, I got lucky. And from the sounds of the impact, my second shot hit glass somewhere, loud enough to draw in the rest of the pack. Grimy feet and hands scrambled over the pavement, and the puppets ran to the source of the sound with glee, completely unaware that their prey sat not 20 feet above them. It felt good to smile, even with the restrictive grip of the gas mask over my face, and I untied the band as fast as I could, ready to dart for the next block of ruins now that my pursuers were confused. My idea had worked, and if it could deflect threats here, why not every time I got into a bind? Maybe I wouldn't have to fight after all. I could be like those super spies from the movies, the ones who cracked the code, stole the secret documents, and got out without anyone the wiser. I'd be a hero. The pirate would let Jamie and Chris go, and maybe Chris would be so impressed that... A flash of color caught my eye through the open window, and I froze. He stood around 100 yards or more away, casually watching me from atop one of the rubble piles that had been a house arms at his sides. I guessed it to be a man, though I couldn't really tell with how far away he was, as his protective mask and yellow chemical suit obscured most of his facial features anyway. He didn't have any kind of a weapon that I could see, but it didn't matter. With that fancy suit, the fact that he'd spotted me, and the uncanny way he watched without caution from the open, he could only be from one place. Elsar. My pulse jumped, and I slowly pulled the submachine gun from my shoulder, glancing down to thumb the safety off. Raising it, I squinted down the sights, and saw nothing but the swirling, contaminated fog. Ice crept through my veins, and I swallowed, tasting sour fear on the back of my tongue. No way you could move that fast. The streets were too open, and with that suit, he would have been slow, clumsy, visible. Surely, the puppets would have seen him standing there at some point in their run past the rubble. But now, he was gone. Within seconds of me breaking eye contact. Almost as if...
No.
I shook my head to clear the thought away, switched the safety on my Type 9, and headed for the cramped opening beneath the rubble to the stairs.
It's just my imagination. There's nothing there.
But the entire journey back down the steps, my hands trembled, and I jogged down the lonely side streets and fire-blasted alleyways with a new sense of urgency. Every curl of fog now looked like a man in a chemical suit, every shadow a soldier, every breath of wind a potential enemy footfall. I had escaped the mutants for now, but a part of my brain hissed the nagging question I didn't want to think about over and over in my head. If I was truly alone out here, then who or what was watching me? Part 19. Several blocks further in, I squeezed into an overhang made from the collapsed front of a building and pulled the special plastic army canteen the pirates had given me from my belt. With a gas mask on, and the air poisoned by whatever chemical dump had been hit by the bombs, the only way I could drink was through a special tube that ran from the canteen adapter to my mask, and my throat burned with a dryness that cried out for respite. Scanning my surroundings, I tilted the canteen back and chugged through the straw inside my gas mask. How big is this town? I could be here all day. Do they seriously expect me to find one tiny box on the first try? I blew air back into the tube to keep the canteen from caving in and tried not to think about what I'd do once it got dark. The fog around me hung so thick that at times I couldn't see more than 10 yards, and at other times a breeze would shift it enough to see around 100 at best. Fires churned from various pyres, former dwellings full of pine, drywall, insulation, and plastic going up in thick black smoke. The few sections of my skin that were exposed itched with the light ash that rained from the sky, and the water in my mouth tasted strong of plastic and chlorine. Everything gritted and crunched under my shoes, and more creatures screamed in the distance, the high shrieks of puppets curling in my ears like worms.
They're moving away.
I cocked my head to one side like I'd seen Chris do, mouth slightly agape to hear better, and whispered myself in a bid to stay calm.
Which means they either lost my scent, or...
Pebbles and bits of crumbled asphalt rattled on the ground beside me, and the vibrations rippled through my legs to flare inside my mind with alarm. With trembling fingers, I jammed the canteen back into my belt and fumbled with a cloth flap to secure it in place. My chest tightened, and I dove onto my belly to crawl beneath a fallen roof beam, squeezing like a bug deeper into the ruin. Steel groaned right above me, metal slamming over and over into the metallic tarmac with rapid beats as thunderous feet skittered closer. I shoved my head and arms through a gap in the rubble, wriggling into total darkness, desperate to get out of the open. Like a mole, I burrowed into the debris, crawled against tight walls that rubbed my shoulders, and prayed for an opening somewhere. All it would take was one cave-in, one drop-off into an old basement, one creature coming up the tunnel toward me, and I'd never make it out. The entire rubble pile shifted as a massive steel I-beam impaled the dirt not 10 feet in front of me, piercing the dark with soft gray light from the outside. Frozen in place, I could only watch as the leg withdrew and held my breath. On the heels of the electro-synth foghorn blast, a gargantuan shadow passed over the hole, with eight long legs made of flash-rusted steel that stood as tall as a three-story building. Braided metal cables snaked up each one, leading to a long, spiral, column-like tangle of jumbled metal and greasy black sinews. A black round signal dish at the front swung back and forth like a head, with a ring of bright white lights around it that flickered with every strange sounds the beast made. Beneath it, a signal loudspeaker hung by both bolts in an array of pulsating black tissue, as if whoever or whatever had made this thing couldn't decide between it being a machine or a living beast. Thicker cables swayed just under the head in the way I'd seen spider mandibles do, only there were dozens of them, each long enough to reach the ground if they extended to their full length. At a quick glance, one could easily have mistaken it for a walking radio tower. If it makes one wrong step, I'll be human jelly. My lungs ached, but something caught my gaze beneath the mutant, something big and square, grasped in its mass of cable mandibles. A truck. The Humvee swung along, dented, charred, and broken in the grasp of the Echo Spider, all its tires flat, the bulletproof glass smeared from the heat of the missiles. I couldn't see inside it, or the soots of the glass, but I figured there couldn't be a living soul left. After all, how long would someone last, trapped inside that thing with no food or water, the outside air poisoned, unable to escape after the bombs fell? Yet, the enormous insectoid being still carried it along, like a bird with a bundle of twigs in its beak, and that jarred something loose in my mind. It's collecting metal. Watching it go, my fear slipped away a little, and a timid curiosity took hold. The spider hadn't seen me, or I'd be dead already. If it truly was collecting scrap, like the ones in Northern Junkyard that had given our mechanics so much trouble, then maybe, just maybe, it had accidentally scooped up a small, black box. My guts begged me to stay hidden in the claustrophobic burrow under the rubble, but in my mind, I knew there was only one way to find out for sure. As soon as the Echo Spider passed on to the next block, I clawed my way up through the hole its leg had made in the debris, and into the gray light of Collingswood. I could still see the huge creature from a distance, but it moved fast enough that I couldn't wait, or the fog would swallow it up. Once I jerked myself free from the last desperate grasp of broken wood and shattered cinder block, I skidded down the heap to the street and jogged after the beast. Had anyone told me a week ago that I would be chasing some giant mechanical spider through a ruined city, I would have laughed in their face. Now I fell into my jog, eyes switching back and forth between my quarry and the ruins around me. My snug home in Louisville, the furthest thing from my mind. No doubt there were a few creatures here big enough to challenge the Echo Spiders, so they didn't care who or what they walked over. But I couldn't be so careless. One wrong step, whether too close or too far behind, and I could risk losing the mutant. Or worse, running face first into one of its steel legs. However, if I rounded the bend and found myself in the midst of more puppets, or God forbid, birch crawlers, I'd be dead in a heartbeat. Onward we went, the unsuspecting iron bug and I, its feet screech thumping, mine crunching over loose stones and charred wood. At block 6, my lungs began to ache, and I remembered how little I'd had to eat since leaving the Harper's Vengeance. Despite my water break earlier, dryness crept back into my throat, and a painful stitch cramped in my side. I had a harder and harder time keeping my footfalls soft on the wrinkled pavement, and I almost turned my ankle in exhaustion 3 times. Bright white light slashed through the fog just in front of me, and I stumbled over my feet, skidding to a stop just inside a nearby doorway that hadn't collapsed. My heart raced, and I poked my head out the moment the light slid by. Oh, Hannah, what have you gotten yourself into? As near as I could guess, the ruin across the street had once been a school, built from red brick, at least 2 stories tall. The bombs had smashed its upper floors like a Lego set under a bulldozer, with only the 4 corners of the building left standing, along with two rectangular concrete shafts in the center, likely for either stairs or an elevator system. Crumbled bricks had been shoved to the outside of the building in a ring of orange-colored rocks, and the various halls, alcoves, and destroyed sections of the second story had been filled with all kinds of scrap metal. Bent sheet steel roofing, rusted iron steel lamps, and entire cars were jumbled together in a huge mound, everything held together by gooey strands of a strange black substance that looked eerily familiar. Just like the brain shredder, I swallowed to keep my stomach from rising in revulsion. Meat. The spiders were holding their nest in place with the same material that glued them together. Long, ebony tendrils of living, mutated flesh. In spite of the walls of goo, I could see them inside. Four huge metal insects scuttled back and forth with clicks and chatters that sent shivers down my spine. And some of the swollen sections of black seemed to move on their own, like nightmarish pimples ready to burst with rot. Flattening myself back inside the doorway, I bit my lip to keep down a whimper and shook my head at myself. I couldn't do this. I couldn't go in there. After all, who was I kidding? I wasn't some badass ranger. I was the skinny girl who got knocked out during gym class by a rough football throw, and everyone had laughed. I was the quiet one who sat in the third row and watched Kelsey Dunmark get asked out by Robert McPherson because I never worked up the courage to speak to Robert at all. I was the nameless kid who held the camera for Matt and Carla because thousands of subscribers would have found me too boring to watch instead. Almost everything that I'd survived so far had been by sheer dumb luck, not through skill or bravery. I couldn't find the stupid box, not with all those spiders in there. It was impossible. Tears brimmed at my eyes as I slid to the ground, pulled my knees to my chest, and sniffled under my gas mask. There's nothing wrong with being scared. Jamie's voice called through my tangled thoughts in an encouraging whisper, her faith in me unwavering as it had been from the start. Never assume this can't be beaten. Chris's warm smile floated over my mind's eye, and deep inside, a little flame ignited in my chest, a longing to see him again, a burning need. A pull like gravity. I blinked at my tears and took a deep breath. My legs stretched, the calves pushed me back onto my feet, and calm smoothed over my frazzled nerves.
Red lights and low voices.
With one finger, I switched off the safety on my Type 9.
That's the name of the game.
Pushing the fear out of my head, I darted around the corner and sprinted over the streets to the school as fast as my legs could go. Black walls of living muscle reared in front of me, poisonous fog swirled around my feet. The mechanical chittering of the echo spiders filled my ears. My shoes skidded and crunched over the broken asphalt, and my heart roared. Any moment, the spiders would notice, and I'd hear the screech of their sirens as they bore down on me, the terrible white light from their heads blinding my eyes. They would rip me apart, suck out my guts, and string me up like a deer. Somehow, I reached the other side and slowed to a halt beside one grimy, fire-blackened brick corner. I made it. I actually made it. I didn't think that would work. Stunned, but still fueled by adrenaline, I swept my eyes over the mass of tendons that lines the gaps in the wall and caught sight of a spot dark from shadow instead of mutated flesh. At one time, it must have been some kind of corner office window, but the bombs had, of course, blown it out and scorched the interior. However, the black growth stretched thinner here, and with the dim red glow of my headlamp, I could make out a room with a door on the other side. Tendrils and things that looked like roots snaked across the burnt carpet. Other than that, it appeared, well, as clean as anything could get around here. Gripping the edge of the window, I hoisted myself inside, careful to check each corner of the cramped space. A desk had been half buried by fallen debris to my right, and there were a few picture frames on the floor to my left. Their glass shattered, the photographs burned away. The ceiling light hung halfway out of the powdery foam tiles around it, and more strange black tissue could be seen inside the ceiling cavity. My rear headlight bathed the room in a bloody aura,
and I shuddered at the sensation of both shoes smearing over greasy muscle strands on the floor, like stepping on sticky chunks of bicycle inner tubes. Don't think about it. Don't think about it. Don't think about it. I cocked my head to one side and tried to slow my breathing so I could listen better. Echo spiders screech-thumped somewhere on the other side of the closed door, with occasional chittering calls to one another, and a low, slushing, squelching noise hummed in the background, reminding me of intestinal rumbles. Despite the gray light of the foggy exterior, everything inside seems to be some shade of black or red in my headlight beam. Crossing to the door, I turned the knob with a dry, rusted creak and poked my head into the expanse beyond.
Oh, great,
I mutter under my gas mask. The door opened into a semi-intact hallway on the first floor, blocked by a cave-in of cinder block and metal to my right, but the rest of it still open to my left. Dusty, green metal lockers lined the white-painted walls on both sides, the low-slung ceiling covered in the same pepper and salt color ceiling tile as the office, with more extinguished fluorescent lights that would never work again. Vibrations from every step the massive spiders took nearby reverberated through the floor, and I realized the mound rested above me now. These old hallways more akin to tunnels in an anthill than corridors where hordes of students had trudged to their next class. Still, much of it reminded me of my not-so-distant high school days, and it would have been nostalgic if not for a dense coat of slime that lay all over the tile floor, in a shade halfway between engine grease brown and viscera purple. Spatters of it adorns the lockers and walls as well, with drag marks to show where something huge had slid over the muck in serpentine ease down the abandoned corridor. I've got to find a way to their scrap piles. Maybe the slime trails lead to the nest. After all, following bloody mutant fluid never got anyone killed, right? Ignoring my own glum thoughts, I tried to avoid the majority of the goo on the floor, but it was no use. Soon, my boots were covered in the stuff, and I had to keep one hand on the wall of lockers to my right in order not to fall. Small bones were scattered in various places over the floor, and I did my best not to look at them. As many resembled fingers, toes, and a few splayed hands. These crunched under my shoes, adding a sickening counter effect to the squish-squash of grease, and tickles of nausea threatened to resurge in my gut. I reached an intersection, and in the dark corridor to my right, something gurgled. Turning my head, I bit my tongue beneath the mask and stifled a scream. Suspended in sticky folds of ebony ligaments, outstretched figures hung from the walls, lining both sides of the dilapidated hall like trophies in a hunter's cabin. Some were completely covered in a horrific cocoon of veiny gray membrane, while others were merely secured by their four limbs in a spread eagle position. None of them moved, but from the way they twitched, chests rising and falling in spasmodic jerks of involuntary respiration, left me with no doubt. They're still alive. Most of them were puppets with mottled skin, wide eyes wide open in frozen shock, knobby wooden teeth gaped in a muted scream of agony. But there were a few bodies that had pale, pinkish skin, wore more normal clothing, and even had some equipment on them. Gray, uniformed Elsar soldiers, t-shirt-wearing civilians, a few younger figures dressed as pirates. And toward the end of the hall, one or two captives adorned in ragged black polo shirts, all hung with silent despair for the entities that were wrapped around their torso. They looked like slugs, woven from black sinews, and clutching to the ribs of each body with little nubby spines on their fat bellies. Each slug had its head buried into the flesh of its host, and it wriggled with greedy gulps, the entire length of the creature spasming as mouthfuls of blood slid down its gullet. Some were the size of a knapsack, and these were the ones wrapped like snakes around the more exposed people, while the others were so big they had begun to form a cocoon of grayish-black flesh around themselves, their victims hollowed out like a dry corn husk.
In the dim glow of my headlamp, the worms gleamed from the mucus that covered them. A single, long spike on the tips of each one's tail like a scorpion, and a chorus of gurgles spilled from their maws as they drained the life from each poor body. Mortified, I went to take a step back, and my shoe pressed down on an especially fat tendon buried in the slimy floor. All the gurgles stopped, and somewhere overhead, the screech thudding of the spiders paused, as if they too could sense the presence of an unwanted guest. I held my breath under the mask, too terrified to move. That's not good. From deep within the mass of tortured corpses, a gray pod split, gushing fluid onto the floor, and an avalanche of black muscle tumbled out. It writhed for a few moments, and one end of the mass rose, big as a car, the entire length of the creature enough to stretch half of the corridor. 8 concave holes in the now smooth body twitched, as if to move legs it didn't have yet, and the cavern of various pits in the head sucked air like a vacuum cleaner. It swayed back and forth, tasting the air, and my mind reeled. This was why they needed the metal. The spiders were laying eggs, and their babies couldn't walk, see, or call to each other without fresh scrap. In a spasmic, knee-jerk style reaction, the enormous echo pupae slid down the hall toward me, slithering in between the mass of hanging bodies and fellow larvae, intent on making its first live kill. Part 20. As a young girl, I'd had a recurring dream about running from something in the dark, but no matter how fast I ran, I moved as slow as molasses. The thing behind me would always catch up, and just as I turned to face it, I would awake, screaming. Over the years, I either forgot or grew out of the dream, and by the time I was in high school, it became a distant memory. Now, however, it all came flooding back with visceral clarity. I threw myself down the opposite hallway, my shoes sliding over the greasy floor with a frustrating lack of traction. Each breath came short and tight through the suffocating gas mask, and I fell multiple times, only to claw my way back to my feet with hands covered in the clammy, jello-like mucus. Darkness flew by, my red headlamp the only illumination I had in the depths of the nest, and everything blurred into a horrifying ticker tape parody of black, red, and gray shadows. Pain flared in my knees from the rough tumbles I took to the cold tile, and my heart raced so fast I thought it might explode. Can't slow down. It's right fucking there. Several yards behind me, the echo pupa slithered with ease across the slimy floor, and air sucked into the maw of its cavity-ridden head with the sound of a wet toilet plunger. Overhead, the ruined school building shook as more adult echo spiders skittered around in frantic search for whatever had caused the disturbance below. A small, reasonable part of my brain wondered if they communicated like honeybees, talking with their babies through ultrasonic noises between the rubble. If that was the case, then the entire nest knew I was here. Heaps of debris loomed out of the dark, blocking my passage to the right, so I veered left, down a narrow hall, choked by shattered cinder block, fallen timbers, and jumbled bones. Dried marrow and charred wood snapped under my filthy boot heels, abandoned classrooms on either side of me that yawned in the dark, waiting jaws to swallow me whole. Something wriggled at my elbow, and I screamed under my mask to stagger onward, too afraid to look back. The disgusting parasitic squeals blasted in my ears, the pupae close enough I could reach out and touch it. It would be on me in seconds, and I wouldn't have the strength to fight it off. The beast too close for me to whirl around and shoot. An unblocked door jumped out of the shadows to my right, and I hurled myself inside, the worm moving too fast to pivot, and it glided past me down the hall.
With hands that shook so hard I could barely manipulate my own fingers, I shoved the wooden double doors shut and spun the little metal deadbolt. That's not going to do anything. Stepping back from the door, I gasped air through the stuffy filter on my gas mask and took in the room with my flickering red headlamp. I didn't have much time. The bug would be back any second now, and if I couldn't find a way out, the most merciful thing to do would be to stick my Type 9 in my mouth. There had to be another way out, or at least something I could use to barricade the door better. Various black-topped wooden tables filled the room with stainless steel sinks at their center, likely a former science lab for chemistry students. A white dry erase board hung from a wall behind the old teacher's desk, and there were still faint black marks on it from old equations that had never been solved. The chairs around the room were scattered everywhere, along with ripped textbooks, torn papers, and spatters of rusty red blood that formed a trail into one lonely corner. Something glinted from the dusty curtains of blackness, and I took a cautious step closer. Yikes. He sat slumped against the wall, the gray uniform on his body stained with clumps of brownish mucus, black goo, and dried red blood. The soldier wore a Kevlar helmet with broken night vision goggles on the front, and a plate carrier adorned in several empty magazine pouches. A long black rifle lay not far from his right hand with its bolt locked open on another empty magazine. Brass casings littered the floor around him, and two other pupae lay to one side of the room, rotting in the stillness of death. Both his legs had been gnawed to the bone, everything missing below the exposed yellow kneecaps.
Come on, give me something.
I knelt to scour his pockets for ammunition or grenades, but as I did, two objects fluttered from the man's cupped left hand onto his stiff knees. One was a little yellow and black plastic remote, much like a walkie-talkie, and at a push of a button, its tiny screen lit up from whatever automatic shutdown it had been in. In the corner of the screen, the battery showed a low charge, but it still worked, at least for now. The other was a tiny green notepad, its white pages tinged pink to the light of my headlamp, speckled with flecks of dried blood. Hurried writing lay scrawled over the lines on the paper, and despite the eerie slushing from the hall that told me the echo pupae was circling back, I picked up the little booklet with tender fingers. They're all dead. We thought this place was abandoned, had it rigged to blow, and they pounced on us, dragged our whole squad into their nest. I managed to break free before the little ones could latch onto me, but the larva stung me several times, and now my legs won't work. Talk about shitty luck. Charges were all set. We had the item in our grasp, and now the freaking spiders have it. I'm running low on ammo, and the only reason they haven't got to me yet is my canine tracker. Poor Dusty might be gone, but every time I hit the tone button, it scares him off. Not that it matters. I can feel the poison in my system. I know I'm done for. If Command finds this, we had the item in our commander's truck, number M43, along with the clicker for the C4. Most of our charges should be intact, since I don't think the mutants understand what they are. Find it, and blast this place, no matter how many of us are in here. With those things eating their way into our boys, there's nothing we can do for them anyway. It's in my arm now, almost like a living thing. I tried to cut it out with a knife, but it's too deep, and... His writing faded into unintelligible squiggles there, as if the soldier's hand had spasmed or frozen. I hated to think about what he'd endured, being paralyzed, left alive in the dark to wait for death. Even if he was from Elsar, no one deserved this. But part of his scribbles stuck in my head, and a dangerous prickle of optimism filtered through my fearful thoughts. The item. His squad had been sent to recover something, and if this note was still accurate, that something lay in the scrap heaps above me, just waiting to be rescued. It could have been reference to anything, but there was too much at stake for me to brush it off as mere coincidence. My hunch had been right, at least so far. But that meant I had to go through that door,
and the giant spider slug was in my way.
Let's hope this works.
I slipped the nylon lanyard for the remotes around my wrist as the door heaved with impact from outside. At last, the dried wood caved in, and the ugly head of the worm slithered through, bobbing back and forth as it tasted the air in search of me. Panic rose in my mind, but I forced it away and held the tracker collar remote up, its stubby black antenna pointed at the monstrosity. It's still in my way. Hesitation struck out of nowhere, a horrific realization that hit me like a ton of bricks. I couldn't act yet, I realized. Not with that thing blocking my only door out of here. The worm would have to get close, enough for me to get past it. Which meant if this desperate improvised weapon didn't work, I wouldn't even have time to scream before it was all over. In my head, I pictured Chris's smile, felt his arms around me, heard him laugh. One more time. I needed to see him just one more time. This couldn't be it for me. Not like this. I wouldn't let it be.
Here.
I coughed through my mask, finding my voice and shouting both to attract his attention and shoved the fear from my mind.
I'm right here.
Surging forward, the greasy black monster plowed between the desks, its throat gaped wide, little tendrils splayed from each side of its underdeveloped mouth, ready to pull me in. My thumb pressed the tone button, and the remote screen lit up. A high, piercing shriek of pain ripped through the air, and the worm's charge fumbled into a spasmodic thrash. It threw itself from side to side, smashing chairs, splintering the desks, and covering everything around it in a fresh coat of brownish-red mucus. Seizing my chance, I darted past it, climbing over the ruined door, and sprinted back into the slimy hallway. I turned left upon reaching the main corridor and caught the rustle of movement in the shadows down the hall I'd first come from. The crimson beam of my headlamp caught several black coils of wriggling flesh oozing their way up the greasy tiles, and my guts writhed. Okay, now they're angry. Adrenaline pumping through my veins, I clawed my feet at a nearby floor mat that wasn't as gooey as the rest of the hall and raced onward as more screech thuds resounded overhead. The entire nest was on high alert, and I doubted I'd find many more rooms to hide in. It was do-or-die time. From the abyss, a set of stairs materialized, and I gave a shout of joy beneath my mask. It looked clear. I could see gray light somewhere toward the top, which meant I could get out into the scrap heap, and then bright white light blinded me, and all four of my limbs locked as if I'd been hit by a taser. Dread filled my mind, and no matter how much I internally screamed, I couldn't so much as draw a breath. Look for the light. A chorus of whispers called to me from somewhere up the stairs, and voices spoke with disembodied volume from all different directions, as if bouncing around inside my skull. Soft tendrils of words poked their way into the folds of my mind, slithered into my memories, neither happy nor sad. Violating every thought, every idea, every dream I had. There were so many of them, and only one of me. Why bother to fight? It was warm here, safe, comfortable. There was no point in resisting. I could just relax, let unseen hands lift me up, and everything would be glorious and bright. No more fear, no more struggle. All I had to do was put down that nasty piece of plastic. This is nice. Maybe it wouldn't be so bad staying here. It was so warm, like a big blanket of... Hang on. Why are my ankles cold? Something in my head sputtered like a faulty wire, and I blinked on dry, itchy eyes. Cold, braided steel brushed against my legs. And in an instant, my brain was mine, and flared with primal alarm.
No.
I jammed my finger down on the tone button, and the light stuttered before flickering out entirely. Half-blinded in the sudden resurgence of darkness, I blinked in shock at the sea of rusty steel cables that wriggled on the floor, falling from where they had snapped up my legs and around my shoulders, ready to reel me in like a fly in a web. At the top of the stairs, a huge satellite dish head twitched and jerked. The spotlights around the rim of its dish flickered uncomfortably as its siren cut in and out with static.
Under its head, the tentacle-like cables seized, and the Echo Spider staggered like it couldn't keep its feet, sending chunks of debris raining down around me inside the stairwell. On wobbly legs, I charged up the steps, clicking the tone button in rapid-fire taps, and with the other hand, pulled my Type 9 from its place next to my hip. Yellow bursts of flame lit up the dim stairwell, and bullets stitched across the Echo Spider's dish, smacking one of the spotlights with a shower of sparks.
Get back!
I screamed, my voice hoarse and shaky, but too desperate to care. Hannah Brunn had been switched off, and instead, someone else had taken over. A vicious, crazy, animalistic version of myself, ready to do anything to survive. Confused and in pain, the enormous metal creature retreated with a cacophony of enraged foghorn blasts and chitters, the ground shaking as more of its comrades bore down on the stairwell entrance. Nope. My stairs. Go away. Go away. Go away. Up to meet them I ran, half staggering but not stopping for a second. Cool air from the outside met my neck and bare hands, the familiar sky above. All around me, tall stacks of metal stood bound together with sticky tendons of black sheet metal, angled iron, and rusted I-beams. Doorknobs, refrigerators, and bicycles rested next to huge towers of cars and trucks toward the center of the mound. Black membrane held things in place, along with various swollen pods that wriggled and heaved, more larvae growing in their core. In one corner, a pupae lay nestled in a sling-like cradle of ebony ligaments, half-fitted with a fresh set of metal legs, the steel driven into the vacant holes in its body, a dented satellite dish laying nearby. Four adult Echo Spiders waited from behind various columns and piles, white lights flooding in from every angle the instant I surfaced. Shutting my eyes, I raised the remote and clicked the tone button, waving my arm in a circle as the Echo Spiders bellowed in alarm. I sprayed bullets at them and darted into the interior of the nest, dodging sticky pools of black tendrils stretched like webs between scrap. Dozens of larva pods split to spill the worms inside whenever I got too close, and steel legs jabbed from the adults above me, an ironic twist of insects trying to squash a human as I scuttled through their home. Squelches and shrieks rang in my ears, mutants closing in from every side, but as I ran, a flash of color caught my eye. High up, five cars off the ground in a teetering stack, an armored truck sat, its glass shattered in places. One of the doors bent at the hinges, the others bent and twisted, every tire flattened. It bore the same gray paint job as the uniforms of its former inhabitants, but the white-lined black number painted on the door stood out among all the chaos clamoring for my attention. M43. Bingo. My hands slid on the smooth metal of the bottom truck hood, but I jumped up to gain purchase, remembering the one time I'd gone indoor rock climbing with Mom and Dad. I scaled the rickety tower with frantic limbs, found handholds on open windows, mirrors, fenders, and wheels, my arms and legs aching with the strain. I paused only to click the tracker controller, spiders and worms so close I could feel the cars shake as they clambered after me. The Echo Spiders flashed their lights and stomped ever closer to physically rip me from the tower, but I was in the zone, moving with a fluidity I didn't know I had, giving 110% to every motion. A microwave whizzed past my head, impacting on a truck cab a few feet from me. Broken glass peppered my hair, the Echo Spiders throwing garbage at me with their cable tentacles like kids chasing a pesky raccoon away from their backyard. Creaking and groaning, the stack swayed dangerously, and I lost my grip on the car bumper I'd been holding onto. Oh, shit. The world rushed past me, air howled in my ears, and I flailed in desperation. My fingers snagged at an old-fashioned metal side mirror, and I cried out in pain at the sudden jolt in my shoulder, both legs kicking in midair. Something wet and heavy latched onto my shoe, and a suckling maw tried to chew its way through my boot, the black worm thrashing to bring its tail stinger to bear. If it stung me, it would be all over. I brought my other boot down and sent the creepy larva flying with a satisfying squish. Thanks to the brief momentum of respite, I swung myself higher on the pickup truck, dodged a hubcap thrown by one of the adults, and climbed higher. My palm slapped the handle of the armored truck's door, and I dragged myself inside just as rusty cables lunged for my ankles from below. Clicking the tone button to shoo it away, I squeezed into the cluttered interior of the military vehicle and gasped for air beneath my gas mask. I can't keep this up. How am I going to get down from here? Come on, Hannah. Focus. Find the box and get moving. Worming my way past the blood-coated seats, I slid under the steering wheel and through a square door into the rear compartment. Bits of gear, backpacks, and equipment lay everywhere, reminiscent of our truck after its tumble from the cliffs. Spare bottles of water, a few dented ammunition cans, and a box labeled 40mm were jumbled across the floor. But in the corner to my left, I picked up the outline of a slumped human torso. Like his doomed comrade in the school, the soldier lay dead, mangled, with half his spinal column poking from under his uniform jacket. He'd covered himself in a bundle of nylon toe straps wedged between one seat and the metal bulkhead, which had likely saved him from being whisked away to the larva chamber. Still, death had taken him. Maybe moments after his clever ruse was completed, the poor man, a mass of blood, torn flesh, and lifeless, milky eyes beneath his gas mask. His plate carrier held a few round grenades and two pouches on his chest, and next to the man's exposed hip bone lay a little green square with a spring-loaded plunger and a single stubby antenna. Molded into the plastic on one side were the words, "Firing device, electrical M57. And it seemed the soldier died before he could squeeze the trigger, speckles of blood all over it. Breathless, I shoved the junk aside to snatch at the detonator, and my heart stopped as something else caught my eye. No way. There it sat, a black plastic box about the size of a small handbag, tucked just behind the dead soldier's back, perfectly concealed by his last act of courage. Even smeared by his dried blood, I could still make out the faint white letters beneath the rusty red stains on the polymer lid. LBD01106.
Yes!
In spite of everything, I hugged the box to my chest and choked down a sob of joy. I'd done it. This was our ticket home. The world swayed, metal groaning under the strain of sudden impacts, and my heart fell into my stomach. They're going to push it over. More titanic blows rippled up the haphazard tower of vehicles, and the greasy black membranes holding it all in place started to snap. Though wary of my tracker controller remote, the Echo Spiders weren't about to leave me alone, and shoved at the pile of metal with their forelegs, rocking it back and forth like hounds baying at a tree. They couldn't climb up to get me, so instead, they would drop the entire tower down around my head. Frantic, I shoved the box into my backpack, along with a little detonator. Both the soldiers' grenades went into my cargo pockets, and I crawled on hands and knees for the rear compartment door. Everything tilted. The back doors flew open, and loose objects rolled past me as the tower leaned a little too far. Out the back doors of the compartment, I could see another tower sliding closer as mine fell, and a sickening realization struck me. I have to jump. My shoes slid to the edge of the door, and the ground rose to meet me, as every black sinew holding the metal pile upright snapped. I gripped the edge of the door, the backpack pressed between my shoulder blades, and sucked in a deep breath. I had no idea how to gauge the distance, when to jump, or even if I'd make it, but one thing was for certain. If I fell to the ground, with its vast covering of scrap metal, bricks, and concrete, I'd break every bone in my body. In spite of the distance, in spite of my brain screaming that I was way too high off the ground, and the Echo Spiders clustering around to finish their assault, I knew I had no other choice. With a pulse roaring in my ears, I flung myself out of the truck as the tower collapsed and tumbled through the air toward the next scrap pile. Nothing beneath me but 60 feet of cold, poisoned air.
Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3. Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.